I'm Pierre Lumumba here at the Aberdare's Country Club in Nyeri County in the Republic of Kenya in the continent of Africa. And we continue our conversation about the United Nations, but we cover the 1980s to date. Of course, that conversation must rest on an existing history. But the 1980s present a very unique situation in the continent of Africa. This is the period of structural adjustment programs, which are introduced by the IMF and the World Bank, and African economies are suffering. This is the period when we have the collapse of the Berlin Wall and the emergence of a hegemon who now thinks that the world must be bestrodden like the Colossus of old. And the UN in itself also begins to operate in a manner that is a little bit different from the early periods. And Africa is in this mix. Africa is going through economic problems. Africa is going through political problems because the carryover of the many coup d'etats, we are beginning to see rebellions. We are also talking about the days when new countries are becoming newly independent. Namibia is becoming independent, coming out of the clutches of the UN trusteeship in 1990s. The apartheid regime is ultimately collapsed in 1994. Rhodesia is becoming Zimbabwe in 1980s. And we see a UN that is addressing these issues in a totally different way. Conflicts are also becoming many, and indeed a number of organizations are also coming to the fore. Things that were hitherto not known to the world, we now have the question of the status of women. What do we do it? We do with it? We have the Beijing conference in 1985, the problem of children, the problem of trafficking, the problem of minorities and indigenous peoples. So these issues are coming to the fore, and the UN must deal with them, and Africa becomes a focal point in this regard. So it is on the basis of this reality that we must assess the relationship between Africa and the UN. It must also be remembered that until that period, Africa was seen to be a continent that did not have quite a presence in the UN. But something happens during that period. It is the period when, for the first time, we have a Secretary General that comes from the African Union in the person of Egypt's Boutros Boutros-Ghali. We also have prominent individuals. Of course, we cannot forget that Kofi Annan becomes an undersecretary in charge of peace during that period and ultimately becomes Secretary General of the UN. We also cannot forget that there is, in the area of development in the economic arena, we also have Adebayo Adeteji from Nigeria, who is very prominent in the economic arena. So one may want to believe that the relationship between the UN and, of course, the relationship between many African countries individually is better during that period. But it remains mixed. It remains mixed because the Western powers, particularly those in the Security Council, still treat Africa as a stepchild to be treated well when it is convenient and to be mistreated when it is inconvenient, and sometimes to be ignored. And that kind of schizophrenic treatment of the continent of Africa is something that unsettles many people. It is also to be remembered that it is during that period that we begin to have an Africa that is assertive. It is assertive in the sense that Africa herself is looking at our own institutions, particularly the OAU, and we begin to see people like Muammar al-Gaddafi coming up and say, we must change the continent of Africa, culminating in the conversion of the African Organization of African Union to the African Union in the year 2000, and starting in 1999 in Sirte in Libya, 2001, and ultimately becoming the African Union in Durban in the year 2002. But let us go a little bit systematically. The 1980s, what do we see? Coup d'etats, rebellions. We see, for example, in Uganda, the emergence of Yoweri Kaguta Museveni through a rebellion in 1986, and constitutional changes of power, but revolution, which is popular at that time. How do we deal with such countries? We see the emergence of new countries. How do you deal with them? We see at that time the beginning or the heightening of the conflict in South Sudan with the emergence of SPLA, SPLM. We see the activities, the removal of individual leaders in countries such as Congo Brazzaville, the many coup d'etats in Guinea-Bissau and in Sierra Leone. We see it in the Gambia. What do we do with them? All these things, and we see the emergence of rebellions. We see the emergence of Al-Shabaab and Boko Haram, and the UN has to be involved in all these nations, these initiatives. We see them involved in Somalia with the US, and we see how they are treated and how they are thought not to have worked well. We see them MONUSCO in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and now they are thought not to have done well during the overthrow of Mobutu Sese Seko by Laurent Desire Kabila. We see the UN also suffering a big blow with the genocide in Rwanda in 1995. And we see also when we see the removal of Jean Bedel Bokassa in 1979 and the restoration of David Dacko. So we see a UN that is spread thin in the continent of Africa, spread so thin that its impact is very minimal. That is the UN that we are seeing in the visible arena. So that peacekeeping acquires a totally different complexion in the continent of Africa. And commentators and academics are beginning to bring another issue in the nomenclature and the vocabulary of the UN. Are you peacekeepers or peace enforcers? Because they are saying the areas where you are going, there is no peace to be kept. Are you to enforce? What does chapter 7 say? The UN and Africa now find themselves engaged in very many areas. We are engaging in peacekeeping. We are engaging in peace enforcement. We are engaging in the economic arena. Remember the World Trade Organization. We are engaging in education with UNESCO. We are engaging in environment with the United Nations Environmental Programme. We are engaging with UNDP. We are engaging with UN Habitat in terms of habitat. We are engaging in climate change with the parties in COP initiatives. We are engaging in all these things from the 1992 Brazil, and we are going to Tokyo, Kyoto Protocol, we are going to Paris, and all these are about climate change. So the relationship remains alive, but one thing remains as nagging. When will we get into the Security Council? Boutros Ghali does not do it. It is not done by Kofi Annan. It is not done by Ban Ki-moon. We wonder whether Guterres Antonios will do it. It is a question that remains alive. And therefore, when you see African countries beginning to pander towards BRICS, it is also a protest. A protest that the UN is no longer serving our interests, but the relationship remains. It is a marriage, one may say, a marriage of convenience, where parties sleep on the same bed. Sometimes they have the same dreams, but many times the dreams are different. That is the relationship between the United Nations and Africa in her entirety and even the continent. But I believe that is a relationship that does not justify divorce. It is one that requires repair. and it can only be repaired when Africa and African countries are treated as if they were not stepchildren. And that is what one looks to as the United Nations now goes into the next phase. And some of us are saying very loudly that the time is now to rethink the architecture and the mandate of the United Nations and the bodies that are created by the United Nations and how it relates to the continent of Africa. We are eternal optimists and we hope that it shall be well. Brothers and sisters, we continue to interrogate the issues that confronting or which the continent of Africa ought to confront, and we will take a break to come back to continue with the conversation. Thank you very much.